You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, Future You gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future You goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
Nine, the Ville, where's my promo sheet? Maybe give you that appropriate promotion here. Here it is. Pre-game at 8 o'clock. And Ryan McMahon is now at the podium. It's brought to you by Class Act Federal Credit Union. Chris Mack will follow here on ESPN 680.
You're listening to Kentucky and...
I remember it was, there was not a lot of energy in the building. It was pretty cold there. And they came out and beat us. They were the better team that night, and we didn't really show up. So definitely need to prevent that from happening again.
Do things like that motivate you, Ryan, when you go back to a building that you've lost to maybe the previous year?
Yeah. You go there with a different intensity, and you go there with the mindset that, you know, no game is given. So we'll walk in there and hopefully come with the mindset that we're focused and ready to go and ready to play.
They're only averaging about 5,000 fans a game again this year, so there's a chance it won't be a kind of atmosphere you're used to. How do you guys make sure you bring the energy?
Just by being dialed into the little detail. I would say not expecting to get energy from anywhere else other than ourselves, you know, from our bench, from our coaching staff, from the players on the court. We've got to create our own energy.
Do you feel like you all have been playing with energy lately? You've won six straight.
Yeah, I feel like we've been playing with energy other than a game or two, but we've been figuring out ways to win. I don't think we played with that much energy in the Georgia Tech game, but we figured out a way to win at the end. And but as far as the other five games, I think we came out with the right mindset and the right energy and gave ourselves a chance to win in a lot of those games.
Why do you guys talk about streaks or look at ACC standings or any of that?
Honestly, no. I didn't know we won six in a row until you just said it. We kind of just focus one game at a time, focus on that matchup. We get dialed into what that team does well, what they don't do well, how we can exploit that, and try to get a W, whether it's at home or on the road.
Have you guys watched film yet of Boston College beating Virginia Tech?
No, not yet. Not as a team, at least. I have. I'm sure some of the other guys might have had that film sent to them. But we've just watched, as a team, just watched personnel. We've watched what those guys on the other team do well, what they don't do well. In particular, how they can affect the game, what moves they like to go to, things like that.
What have you noticed about how they defend the three? Because that's kind of how they shut Virginia Tech down.
Yeah, well, for a while without Popovich in, they were switching 1-5, and even with him in, they do a pretty good job of downing ball screens, which you don't see at this level too often. You see it at the NBA level a lot more. So I'm sure teams have a little bit tougher time dealing with that and how they defend ball screens. So we got to go in there and step into those shots confidently and knock some down.
As you look at them, they've had a lot of guys miss a lot of games. They've kind of got their full complement of players back. Can you get a handle on just how good they can be with everybody?
Yeah, when they have all their pistons firing, they're just as good as any other team in the ACC. And if any team should know it, it's us. That no game on the road is going to be given or going to be easy. You know, as we went on the road, had a few really tough road games in a row, so you can't take any team for granted in this league, despite their record.
For you guys, some people might say you all are inconsistent, but you could also say a different guy's capable of stepping up at any time. Do you look at that kind of as a strength?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a strength. whoever's playing well that game or providing a spark will play more minutes, and that's the depth and the talent of our team. It just shows how good we can be. If one guy's not bringing it one night for whatever reason, we have other guys that can, and that's very valuable in my opinion in a good team.
Were you a big Kobe Bryant fan growing up?
Yeah, he was my first ever favorite player, and I watched a lot of college basketball growing up, so I didn't really watch a lot of NBA. So when people asked me what your favorite player was, a lot of other people's favorite player was Kobe Bryant, so I just said it was Kobe Bryant. But it wasn't really until I watched a few of his games that he like really became my favorite player. And it wasn't until Steve Nash kind of blew up that Steve Nash became my favorite player. And I also didn't get to see a lot of Kobe's games because it was in the West Coast, and when I was that young, my bedtime was pretty early. And growing up, though, a lot of my best friends, Kobe was still their favorite player. And so we would watch documentaries and interviews and all that kind of stuff on Kobe Bryant when we were just hanging out in between games of basketball tournaments or after high school games. So, it's just a tragedy what happened, and your thoughts and prayers go out to his wife and his three daughters now, and it shows you how fragile life can be and makes you not take for granted, simple things like getting home and saying hi to your loved ones and telling them that you love them, and because you never know, when the last time you're going to be able to tell them that. So it's definitely been a weird few days, a couple of days ever since we all found out the news, especially in the sports world and even more in specifically the basketball world. So, it's been tough.
Anyone else?
That was Ryan McMahon. That presser brought to you by our friends at Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money. Text 502-212-3167. Text ESPN to that number, and you will be entered for a chance to win weekly Visa gift cards. That was Ryan McMahon. Chris Mack on the other side of this break. It'll be the V Show. Thanks for listening to ESPN 680-1057.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
We're awaiting Chris Mack. We heard from Ryan McMahon. We're awaiting Chris Mack, who will be at the podium shortly, and his press conference, as always, is brought to you by Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money. Check them out at their website, which is it Class Act?
ClassAct.com? I'm not sure, but I know if you text ESPN to 502-212-3167, you could be entered to win weekly Visa gift cards.
Okay, there you go. So check that out. excuse me. Of course, I'm about to enter my busiest time of the year, so it looks like I'm going to start getting sick.
So that's not good.
That'll be great. I think the remarkable things just keep going on involving Kobe Bryant, Buddy Hield, but Kobe was his hero, he says, number 24, went for 42 points on 24 shots, plus had 5 rebounds, 3 assists, which is 8, which is his other number. Rather remarkable game. Did you see how they won, by the way?
What happened?
They deliberately missed a free throw down 2, guy had 1 foul shot, slammed it off the front of the rim, came right back to him, and he made the layup before anybody could react. And then they won in overtime. And it was a remarkable win. But especially on night four, I was glad when you see a guy like Buddy Hield goes off for 42. By the way, I got him right at least. There were people said, well, he won't be able to play in the league. And I said, no, I believe he will. So I got that one right. I got Trey Young wrong, but I got him right. What a big night he had. And they come through the big victory led by his 42 points. Whenever a guy has a night like that, a career night, I always feel bad if I don't have a rooting interest in the game when his team doesn't win. Because, you know, he really should be able to celebrate. And he would be, obviously, celebrating his performance. But the fact of the matter is you can celebrate a lot more when your team wins the game. Let's go see what we got. I want to talk about some of the stuff I heard at the end of the show with Locke, but I don't want to get into it now because Chris is due at the mic here in like a minute, right? By the way, if you didn't read what he wrote, did you see what he wrote?
Wow. Chris Mack?
Yeah. Really impressive. Very, 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 very impressive. He wrote and put it on Twitter. I don't know whether it was on Facebook originally or what, but it was about his daughter. He was supposed to do something with his daughter's team. And, you know, there's a bunch of things they ask the parents to do, I guess. Give the kids some affirmations, shout-outs, tell them, you know, say something good that they do, something good that they've done, something good that – some characteristic that they're proud of, a bunch of things like that. And he was like, well, I can do all that, but it's just on this day – you know, it was with what's transpired with Kobe as a guy who has two daughters. He has, of course, has a young son, his youngest child, but that was really, really good writing. Terrific writing. It was really, very moving, very earnest. It was really, you find out, you know, I talk about this all the time on the show. You'll probably get sick of hearing it, but especially as you get older, that's what I'm dialed into. I certainly appreciate what people do. That hasn't changed. But the fact of the matter is, when we find out a little bit something about who they are, it's a little bit more perhaps compelling. Well, speaking of Chris Mack, here he is.
How's Malik's media? Are you expecting
to be able to play tomorrow? I do. That was the nice thing after the game on Saturday. Is nothing out of the ordinary happened overnight. I mean, you know, the swelling continued to go down, and you know, he practiced both on Monday and. He'll practice today, so gotten healthy. You know, I think if you look at some of their previous games, they're missing 3, 4, 5 guys at a time, and you know, we know what a challenge it is when you miss one or two. You know, just trying to game plan and think about things that we were going to do when Malik was going to be possibly out against Clemson. I can't imagine having 4 or 5 guys that aren't able to practice, that aren't able to play in games. So they're finally getting to the point where they're healthy and getting some continuity. They've played really well the last two games. They should have won at Pittsburgh. At least they were winning almost the entire game and lost on a buzzer beater. And then they did the job against Virginia Tech, who's played awfully well this year. So that's more the Boston College team that we know we'll see.
Ryan said it's can be kind of a low-energy place to play. What do you remember about the game last year and just anything like that?
That we lost. That you know, Kai Bowman hit some really tough shots, and we couldn't score. That's what I remember the most.
Chris, when you go back to the place the next year after you lost the previous year, can you usually sense a little bit extra fire in your kid's belly?
I'm not really looking for that. I'm just looking for, you know, the right type of preparation. Looking for. The same amount of energy in our practice and the same focus that it takes to win. So, you know, I think if you're a competitor, you certainly remember past performances against different programs or different players. But they're a lot different team. We're a lot different team. And, you know, the quest is to be better than Boston College tomorrow at 9 o'clock. All right. Honestly, I don't remember him much earlier in his career. So focused in the league that we were playing in at the time. So, you know, he's experienced. You know, you talk about always wanting that in a point guard. He has the ability to score it, not just set his teammates up. And so his ability to do things with the ball, being able to contain him, important, really important.
Yeah.
I just think that he hasn't let his practice habits be defined by his, you know, the results in the game, or maybe lack of playing time in certain games determine his outlook or his preparation, or his practice attitude. And that's been incredible. It's been awesome for our team. It's a 180 from a year ago. And, you know, good things generally happen to guys that really put in the time and keep having the right attitude. And that's exactly what I've seen with Darius. And so I'm really happy for him. And, our team needs him to continue to be consistent and, be a guy that we can count on whether he's playing the one or the two. I'd say it's something that he's worked a lot on. From the time I've gotten here, I've always felt like Darius is a really good shooter. He has a really good pull-up game, and that's a little unique. You know, coaches are always trying to get their team to work it and pass the ball and make the extra pass, and so generally that leads to guys taking shots off the catch. And I think Darius is probably stronger at taking shots off the dribble. So we have to give him a little bit of that rope. But it was great to see, like, some of the shots that he made the other night were off the catch. And he hasn't always been the guy that, when he had a clean look, even shot it. Sometimes he'd dribble it. Sometimes he'd jab, he'd jab step at a guy that wasn't guarding him. And, I think he's becoming more experienced, more confident in that area. And it's really great for our team. He can shoot the ball. I mean, I know he was down here talking about how much of a better shooter he is than Ryan, and I won't go that far, but, like, he's not that far off. He can shoot.
Play more consistently on that end. How has that rounded out your defense as a whole?
Well, I mean, I just think that you're as strong as your weakest link. And not to say those guys are the weak links, but, you know, we have certain defenders that are really hard to score against, that do a terrific job, and other guys that are developing. But, you know, if one guy breaks down, it doesn't matter how hard the four guys are playing, you know, on and off the ball and communicating, if one guy's not giving the effort. And by and large, our team's had five guys do what they need to do on each and every possession.
If that's the case, then how important is paint touches for you guys? I know it's always an emphasis.
Yeah, it's always an emphasis. I mean, Popovich didn't play a whole lot against Virginia Tech. You know, he's a guy that's sort of coming off a back injury. Because they played Mitchell at the five so much, it allowed them to switch on and off the ball, and their versatility allows them to, be able to guard, point guards with their four and five men times. And so that really limited, Virginia Tech from getting clean looks. And that's something that we have to prepare for, whether Popovich plays, 5 minutes like he did against VTech, or whether he plays 35 and now the game becomes a little different. We have to be able to get that ball to the paint, whether it's a post up, a drive, a set play, you name it. I just think, most freshmen around the country, are usually on an upward trajectory. And they're going to have times where their play, doesn't maybe match the game prior to. It's a long season for young guys. It's a long season. The time that we've put in through August, September, October, November, December, it becomes long for freshmen. They're not used to it. The intensity, the length of the season. And so you're going to have lulls in their play, but you want an upward trajectory as time goes on. And I think David and Sam are on that pace. I think the other guys are as well. You just guys don't get to see them do it because they haven't earned the playing time over the veterans. But Sam and Dave, and like all our freshmen, are continuing to progress throughout the year. So does that match my expectations? I expected each of those guys to improve. But I didn't have benchmarks for each one of them as we headed into the season. No. I just addressed it with the team. I shared, how I felt and have felt. I wouldn't say it's a weird mood around the team. I'd say it's a weird mood around the country. And so, I think we're all in, disbelief and sort of shock. And, how do you make sense of of what happened. But, you know, I think it's important as the leader of our team and program to sort of address to our team that, you know, each guy's going to process things a little differently and how they see life and how they see one another. And, you know, these experiences are very, very moving. And it's incredibly sad. And but I don't think that Louisville basketball is any different from everybody around the world, how they feel.
How's the jersey ceremony?
That's cool. That's cool. Thanks. Yep. Thank you.
Chris Mack, typically I was wanting so much to hear if anybody was going to ask about his Facebook post, and I had to get up out of the chair for literally a minute because I don't know if it's 32 degrees outside. I guess somebody in here thought it was a good idea to put the air conditioning on. So the studio is, oh, look, the Ice Capades are here to rehearse. So it is ridiculously cold. So I got up to change the thermostat, and then I sit down, and he's talking about exactly what I wanted to hear. So did somebody ask him about the thing he wrote, or I'm not sure what the last question
that
was.
That last question, I was actually cutting in Eamon Brennan Sports
Beautiful.
Center Club.
So neither one of us heard it.
Yeah,
Beautiful.
But no, I heard like he touched on it and said that, you know, he addressed it with the team and shared his viewpoints, and I don't know if it reflected exactly what he put in.
What did somebody say
post
at the end? Did somebody say nice piece you wrote or something? Because I heard him just say, was it thank you, just thank you for being here? Or thank
no,
you?
There was a thank you before that. I'm assuming that's what. Yeah, there were two thank yous there. I don't know what the first one was.
Well, it's a good piece of writing, and it's he's you know you there are people I've seen have done things like that. They're awful human beings that will take tragedy to try and put themselves in a good light. You know, write something that wow, what a wonderful guy this guy is. They're few and far between, thank God. He doesn't come across anything like that. So I just tell you that. I'm, you know, it's not like, wow, because he wrote something moving about somebody's passing, it makes him a great guy. But it's consistent with who he is. I mean, I'm sure, as emotionally charged as this is for a lot of people who invest a lot. We invest a lot of emotionally in our athletes. That's just the reality. People we never met, that's the beauty of sports. It's not the only place. We do it perhaps with musicians and performers, but sports is a different way. We have a rooting interest in the sports, really, unless you go to a movie and you're rooting. You know, I'm not sure why you do that, but basically you're going to be entertained. Sports, you have a rooting interest. You want your team to win, you know, your team to succeed. And there are certain players you have more of an emotional involvement in. And so we do get emotionally invested, whether we even ever set eyes on them in person or not. And there was a lot of people that were that way about him. And as I suggest on yesterday's show, I think there was something more relatable about him. I don't know why. I mean, he's not average size. He's a tall guy. He's a terrific athlete. I mean, you watched. He could dunk every way you wanted. But Air Jordan came across as Air Jordan, otherworldly. We respected how much his athletic ability was awesome. I mean, he was obviously tremendously skilled, too. Don't get me wrong. He was an all-defensive team. He was a fine passer. But you know what I mean. There were things, the beauty, the logo was not him shooting a jump shot. It was him flying through the air with his legs, you know, splayed apart so that he could go dunk it on somebody. Kobe's game became a jump shooter's game, and everybody can relate to that. You know, in your own circle, if you're playing people at your own level, you think you can get a shot off, and this guy was making shots from everywhere. So I think there was an emotional connection with him on a different level for some reason. And so when he passes, everybody, you know, had an emotional reaction. Not everybody loved him. I understand that. And he had some controversy in his life. I also understand that, too. But I think that you relate to a person with an emotional connection based on what you think the bridge is, whether it's just a guy you root for him or you like the way he played. Well, in Chris's case, he does have a young son, but his two older children are daughters, and they're just at the age, you know, that Gigi was, that, you know, they're starting to play and he's starting to get an interest in them playing. And to see that happen, I'm quite certain that the emotional involvement for him was at a different level, as it was for anybody who's had daughters in that situation. It's so unbelievably relatable. Guys who, you know, granted, he didn't make Kobe Bryant's money, but guy who makes his living in basketball with daughters who play, and he's getting interested in their age. And, you know, Richard Pitino sent a funny, not funny, ha-ha, but unusual picture out. He's coaching his son's basketball team, not full time. The guy who's regularly the coach couldn't do it, so they asked him if he'd do it. And they're in the middle of their conference season. There's a million things going on, But he said, yeah, and he said one of the reasons he got to think about it, that he'll never have these opportunities again. And because of the Kobe situation, you realize how tenuous it is. I've always felt bad about that, and Nick will probably say something snarky about it, but I never technically coached Jamie and Nick. I mean, I did enough where I'm sure they felt like they were coached by me. Nick came to my basketball camp, and we would put him in drills and things like that. So I coached him there, and my father was the consummate athlete and player, and he played minor league baseball. He was played in the forerunner to the NBA, and so he played everything. And so he passed on. When I played baseball, he had tips for baseball. When I played basketball, he had tips for basketball. So I passed some of those things on when they were very young. Golf. I think Jamie would argue that I was the first person that showed him how to play the game, and Nick too. But the fact is, they get to the point where then they get older, and if they play in school, on organized teams, I never coached them because it's terrible. It's my own shortcoming because parents are terrible, and I was really afraid I'd kill somebody. I was afraid it was better to not have them coach me, have me coach them, and at least still have a father than be able to have a father but visit me once a week in prison. So terrible, but it's true. And so that's very bad. So
you'd have so much cred, though, when you got out.
It's terrible. I probably should have, but I did. I mean, you feel like I coached you guys a little, right? Please say yes and make me feel better.
Yeah, no. Okay. I'd come to you guys for advice.
Thanks.
I mean, Mom drove us to a lot of the practices, yes. And she deserves a lot of credit for that just because, seasons overlapped, hockey and basketball. But she sometimes would get a little animated on the way home. And so I'd be like, Mom yelled at me about everything. Yeah. What's she right about? And you'd be like, well, you're right. You need to backcheck a little bit more. And then, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, okay. Cool.
I do remember, God bless her soul, she was determined that, anything bad that happened in a game, somehow you could prevent it. You didn't even have to be on the ice. You could somehow prevent it. And so she was convinced that, if you weren't diving, you were not making an effort. And I'll never forget, so she had given you that little speech, and you went out like the next game, and I remember the coach saying to you, Nick, stop diving. Stop it. It's not helping us.
I was diving to make plays, not diving to try to drop
penalties. No, I know, yeah, diving, okay, yeah. But yeah, he was like, stop it. You're not, that's not trying to block a shot. You're just taking yourself out of the play. Stop doing it. So, yeah, so there was that. But
Mom tried to fight an entire hockey team one time. Not to protect
hockey parents can be
not
among
to
the worst.
Protect me to protect another kid on the team that got a dirty hit. She was like, "Nah, don't worry about it. I got it."
She was
entire team from West Virginia. God bless her.
Well, I mean, hockey. First of all, everybody's freezing, so they're pissed off or drunk because the only way they're staying warm. So you got, and thirdly, it's a game that a lot of the parents are not familiar with. So you've got the perfect combination of a little bit of knowledge, inebriation. And freezing and discomfort. And you're in close, tight quarters because usually it's not like these arenas are gigantic for, hockey in this country for kids, youth hockey. There's very few places to sit, so they're usually sitting close to each other. And so it's rife. I always thought they should have a state your damn business. I'm going off on a good riff here. And produce, you get your own show. You want to riff, go riff on your own show. Oh, stop it because you come in and you riff on him. Huh? What?
I was just informing your son about our meetings,
Yeah.
Because he can't.
Don't wait till commercial. Do it while I'm on the damn air.
He can't go to the meeting. So I was like, well, it's fresh in my head. So
waiting for another 7 minutes was definitely going to make
it. I got the memory of a goldfish, Bob. You don't understand.
You're like Dory, I guess. I don't know. Unbelievable.
Why was this meeting less exciting than last week's?
Because last week I got in trouble for calling somebody in the text line.
Easy, calm down. We're not talking about a.
We were saying Patty Ice was Jeffrey Dahmer last week.
We're not talking about a crime suspect. There,
last week was the all-time greatest meeting we ever had.
Maybe. So all right, well, state your business and step aside. Now I lost my whole riff, and I was on a good riff there. I don't even know what I was riffing about. See. Took the whole
This is why I was able to listen to both. You were talking about why hockey parents are all pissed off because they're cold and sometimes drunk because the only
and
way
they
to
don't
stay
understand
is
very much about the game, which is also dangerous.
It's
a little knowledge,
true.
Yeah. No, they're yelling crazy stuff because they don't know, So they're and the great not part, the best. Oh, Maron, me, you, unbelievable. And the great part about it is because the rinks are relatively small, the fans are all seated behind the glass. The kids can't hear any damn thing you're saying. So you're yelling out to your son. It's like me on the other side of the glass here when I'm doing my impersonation. By the way, was that De'Aaron Fox who did that? Who threw it off the rim and got his own rebound? Might have been.
It is the Kings.
I don't think it was. Great play, and they wound up winning in overtime. So you've got that. So I said, this is what I said was the riff was going to be. We should invent a knob hockey game where it's just like it is now, but on the side are two knobs. Each guy controls his set of parents, and they can slide up and just spin around, start whacking at the other parents. You try and knock them off the little peg, you know, that they're the
little side game.
Yes.
There's actually a really poignant USA Hockey poster. It's in the bathroom at Alpine.
It almost makes you cry. It's so good.
Yeah, it's a little knob hockey player, but yep. He's a little kid, and he's looking into the crowd. There's two toy parents screaming at one another.
Yes, getting ready to
and the kid's just looking at him all sad. And then there's another one where there's a knob hockey referee. This one's kind of funny. I don't know why, but I do kind of.
I don't think I saw
sad.
The other one.
And there's two little knob hockey players lining up for a face-off, and a cup of coffee is
flying at the referee.
Hit the referee. There's a toy parent going crazy, and the referee just kind of has this look on his face. It's both sad because it's like, why'd you do that? But also like the blank lady. Like it's a little bit of that. Like what the hell are you doing?
All right, I'm going to say this one last time, but I hope I'll never have to bring it up again. We have nothing to do with not being able to hear the questions at the press conference. Bob, it's 2020, and we somehow can't hear media. Thank you for the update on the year. I was aware the calendar changed. Has no relevance to the rest of your statement. We have no bearing on that. They don't run the press conference like the old Phil Donahue show with somebody running around with a little microphone. You just stand at your seat and say what you say, and there's nothing, not a GD thing we can do about it. So it's either take none of the press conference, which we find people enjoy hearing from the coaches and the players, or try and guess kind of what the question is, because you can tell if the guy says, blah, 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 and you say, well, yeah, I think they are better this year. You would assume he's talking about Boston College, not the output of the Keebler fudge cookies. I mean, you can take a pretty good stab at the fact that he's talking about the opponent. So it seemed worthwhile to play. But there's nothing we can do about that. So shake your head all you want, but there's not a damn thing we can do about that. Texas says, I coach my kids all the time, but I make sure they go one practice a week with the other coaches without me. I will tell you this. I'm a byproduct of my father's philosophy, so you have to know that. I've said it on the show before. My father had only – he used to say to me all the time, and youth coaches, and most of them don't want to hear this. I'll never forget when I moved to town and I was coaching at Bellarmine and some guy came to – we had a radio show and a guy came up and said, we've won the fifth grade championship in the city for the three last 4 years. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry for you. And he said, huh? And I said, I'm sorry that you think that would mean anything to me. What do I care? How do I know? Maybe you won it because you cheat. Maybe you won it because you recruit. Maybe you won it and the kids couldn't stand playing for you. Maybe the kids who finished said, I'll never play basketball again. So – there you go. That's I don't. It doesn't tell me anything. I mean, especially for youth sports.
Damn, dude, you just pooped all over that guy.
I didn't really say that out loud, but
I was just saying, man.
But I didn't react. I mean, he wanted me to say, "Wow, congratulations, that's great."
He wanted you to hire him.
So I was like, "Well, okay," and the reason is my father had three questions, and I'm absolutely nothing has changed in my opinion of this. When he used to ask me this when I was playing any youth sport, Little League baseball, whatever I was playing, first thing I asked when he got home was, did you have fun? Because if we weren't having fun, we had no why. Because if I wasn't having fun because I really didn't want to play, he was the first one to tell me, well, don't play. Because don't play for me. I had my athletic career. I love playing sports. This is him talking. But don't play for my sake. And there's a lot of kids, I got news for you folks, you may not want to face it, but there's a lot of your kids are playing for you. And I absolutely know that firsthand, and I won't get into some stories, but believe me, they don't really have a great passion to play the game, and you're doing the game a disservice, you're doing them a disservice, you're doing the team a disservice. They don't want to play, don't make them play. I mean, it's different than if they committed and they really wanted to play, and then halfway through the year they're not playing much, and then they say, well, I don't know. That's different. You can say, listen, you committed to it. You should finish what you started. That's fine. But then if the reason is, you find out he's not enjoying playing, well, then at the end of the year he needs to find another endeavor. So my father always – and frankly, I hate to say it, my father wouldn't have articulated it with a 10-year-old son, but he probably wanted to make sure that there was not wasn't playing for a coach who was abusive in some way, you know, verbally, physically, and even worse, God forbid. So, and that's why you ask, did you have fun? Because that opens the door for a kid to say, well, no, and then you can find out, well, what do you mean, no, why? You know, then, so, okay, so the answer was yes. And then the only other question he asked was, what'd you learn? And the fact is, his approach was always, every time you set foot on the practice field or on the practice court, you should walk off that court and feel like you learned something and you were better than when you got on it. And don't blame it. Yeah, well, the coach doesn't really know. He's just a so-and-so. He sells insurance. He doesn't know anything about basketball. Well, you can always learn. And I learned that a very interesting way once. I was a good little baseball player when I was little, and I was on the All-Star team. And we were at going to all-star practice, which means you're playing against some kids you really haven't played before. And there was a little left-handed pitcher, and he threw me a couple of pitches, and I swung and missed. And two pitches. I can remember it's like yesterday because I can almost still see the ball. It looked like a basketball. For some reason, I just didn't hit the damn thing. And I took the bat, and I tapped the dirt. And we're driving home, and we get in the car, and he's driving. And we're having a conversation. You have fun. I was like, yeah, you know, what'd you learn, blah, blah. And he said, well, by the way, what Why'd you get so mad after you didn't bagging your bat into the dirt? I said, "Well, Dad, I mean, I didn't jump up and down and have a temper tantrum or swear. I tapped the dirt." Uh huh. He said, "Why'd you do that?" I said, "Well, I thought I should hit that kid. I didn't think he had really good stuff." Uh huh. Well, was the answer in the dirt? No. He said, "Then why are you wasting your time in the dirt? Why didn't you ask yourself, why aren't I hitting this guy? Should I move up in the box, back in the box? Am I waiting the wrong place? Am I leaning forward too much? Am I committing too early? Do I not see the ball well? Should I choke up on the bat? Should I wait a little bit and try to go to left field?" There's a million things you can do. And then for the first time, the whole driver looked me in the eye and he said, "But I promise you, the answer was not in hitting the dirt." And I was like, well, okay, Daddy. And he was right. And so that's the point. I didn't have to have a coach at that moment to try and figure out how to get better. I mean, that's what you did, frankly. You older listeners know that. I mean, most of the time we played when we were kids, we didn't have coaches. You figured it out on your own. And you figured it out because if you didn't figure it out, you weren't going to play. You either were going to be a crappy player and nobody was going to pick you for the team, or your team was going to lose and then you're going to have to wait to get back on the court. Now the kids don't play unless, and they expect it. It's not their fault. We don't let them play unless as organization and adults and referees and screaming parents and organization and blah, blah, blah. So, I think we do them a disservice. I mean, we used to play, and we played a lot of baseball in New York, baseball, a big baseball town in the summer. And if you didn't have enough guys, you know, you just modified the rules. We only got four guys on a team. Fine, you can only hit to the left side of second base. You know, left-handers. One of the reasons I like to hit the left field so much. They didn't give me any concessions because I batted lefty. Too bad. You still got to hit to the left side of second base. Okay, so that's what we figured out. And you played different positions, and you learn to play. And so I think that's a good thing. But that's why I said, if that guy had told me, if he had said, yeah, my kids had a ball, they loved it, and you know, and at the end of the year we were, not that he would volunteer that information, but I'm saying I can't gauge whether you're a good youth coach simply because you're the 3-time fifth grade champions. I mean, that's, what does that tell me? Doesn't tell me anything. But did the kids have fun? Did they love the game? I mean, I'll never forget, we got a letter from a woman, God bless her. Everybody does things their own way. Our basketball camp, for example, was, in the morning, you know, we would have some teaching, some stations, some practice. You went with your team and you practiced. We did stations like 1 or 2 days, but we didn't do it every day. And then you'd practice, and then you'd play a game, and then there'd be a contest. And then after lunch, we'd have a great lecture. I had some great people in to lecture. And then we had an afternoon game. And then basically it was day camp. That was pretty much your whole day. We did a lot of fun stuff. We did, we did a shooting contest. We did a bunch of things. And this woman whose kid was in kindergarten wrote me a letter, basically, scathing letter about the camp. That's not how you run a camp. You should be teaching fundamentals every day. I mean, she wanted me, like, to put the kid in the military. And I was like, okay, well, let me say this. One, if your kid really wants to learn, there's plenty of opportunities for him to learn here. Plenty. We have great lecturers. Every coach, one of the things we talk about in the when we had them all together for our pre-camp meeting, was you're going to find kids that, you know, are like little sponges. They want to soak up everything. Take advantage of those kids' in enthusiasm. And, you know, during lunch, you know, that we'd see kids working with coaches and doing not just the best players, just the kids that wanted to learn. Sometimes they were, frankly, among the worst players. They were kids that you were there, your heart almost went out to them because they wanted so badly to be players, but they weren't any good yet. But, you know, so it was not a matter of, oh, let's just cater to the good players. But there was plenty of opportunity for that. But the reason I bring that up is because what I think the most important thing, we had mostly younger kids at that camp. There were some high school age kids. Chris Burke came to our camp and made the All-Star team. I'll never forget that. But, you know, it was, you know, I did a lecture. My staff was there. I thought the biggest thing was that when they walked home, and we gave every kid at the end of the week a written evaluation of his game and things that he was, you know, good at, things he needed to work on. And so, but the big thing is when they went home, I wanted them to love basketball. I was reading in this article about this woman who's a teacher. I can't remember who it was. Oh, I know exactly who it was. I was reading about Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, and he had an educational consultant who worked with him on the program who had very strong thoughts about how kids learn and how they teach. And she was advising him, and she said the best thing that you can do for them is, like, she had a sculptor on. And he was like, what do you want me to teach the kids? She said, I don't want you to, quote, unquote, teach them anything. I want you to go out there and love your clay. That was the term she used. He was like, what? I said, just go out there and love what you're doing. They'll ask you questions. And he went out and just did that. He just started sculpting, and sure enough, kids are inquisitive. Some of the questions are silly, and some of them are really insightful. But they saw the passion and the enthusiasm he had for it, and how much he seemed to enjoy it. And one of those kids went on and became a very accomplished artist. And that's what we tried to do with our thing. We wanted the kids to go home and love basketball, love the camp, and love basketball. And we went from, I think it was like 50 kids the first year to, I don't know, like, about 100 the second year. And the third year, we had so many, we had to go get gyms all over the city. Remember that? We had vans driving all over the place. It was we had like five.
One of those gyms. It was a high school gym, I remember, and it was a fine gym. It didn't have AC.
Oh yeah, it was really hot.
And so we had the big ass fans or whatever.
I think it was from the big ass fan company. It was a big fan, but it was fun, and the kids took away from it a love of the game. And so I didn't write a nasty letter to it, but I was like, well, ma'am, you don't get really what you have your camp. You can make them little soldiers, and I'm sure maybe it'll work out for some of them. But, you know, the ones who wanted to learn at our camp certainly had an opportunity. They got great coaches there. They had great instruction. And most importantly for kids at that age, they love the game. And that's what I always said. My father's best endorsement to me was, you know, the old saying TGIF? My dad, it was TGIM. He's like, thank God it's Monday. Who does that? Because he loved what he did. He loved coaching. He loved being around the kids. And, I mean, he was not nuts. But, I mean, he would get up Monday and think, yeah, yes, I get to go work with these kids again and coach and teach them. And he would have them over the house for dinner. My poor mother used to have to cook once a year this gigantic Italian feast for all of his players and the JV players and the staff. And he was doing all sorts of crazy things before there were color for your shoes. Our school colors were green and white. He took all the only shoes that you used to wear back at that time were the Chuck Taylor canvas, and he would take them home and dye them all in our bathtub. The house stunk to high heaven for like about a week, but it didn't matter. He got everybody's shoes dyed green. They went out with green shoes. He took two basketballs home. I don't know why more teams don't do this, by the way. It looks so cool. And I've said this. I think it's one of the reasons I fell in love with basketball. See, my dad accomplished what he set out to do without saying a word. He painted one basketball. He painted, it was a solid white background with green polka dots. And he painted the other one like the ABA ball, you know, alternating panels with green, white, green, white. And those were the two balls they came out to start two-line layups with. They shot with the colored ball and the polka dot ball. And then when they, you know, started to do their real pregame stuff, shooting and stuff, those went back in the basket and they used the other balls. But it looked so cool, and they came out, those green sneakers, and it was all him. He did all of it. He didn't get paid money to do it. He just did it out of his own because he loved it. He loved the game. He loved the team. It's unbelievable. And his belief. Now, as you get more serious, I understand that. As it goes up, you know, the results matter more. But I'm telling you, youth kids, if you are coaching them or your kid is playing, there's two questions you ask. Did you have fun? And what'd you learn? And if you don't get good answers to those two, I don't care about the other ones. I don't care if he scored 40 points or hit three home runs. If those two answers are wrong, you're wasting your time. I mean, the landscape is littered with accomplished players who hate the game. Hate the game now. Will never go around the game anymore. They resent it. They hate what it did to their lives. That's the truth. I mean, so now don't get me wrong. I mean, after did you have fun? Yeah. What'd you learn? I learned. And then I'd say, so how'd you do today? Did you win? You know, how'd you do? And you know, and if I did well, I had a good game. He was happy. I mean, it wasn't like he was blasé about it. I remember the first time I scored in double figures. We had a junior high school, not a middle school. So it was 7, 8, 9. So it was kind of like a miniature high school where the 7th and 8th graders played on what would be the equivalent of a JV, and the 9th graders played on the varsity for the middle school. And then, of course, the high school had the same thing. So I was an 8th grader on the 9th grade team. Ooh. And I remember the first game I scored in double figures there. You know, he asked me the other questions. You know, Jeff, fun? Yeah, what'd you learn? What'd you learn? I told him. And a little bit later, I remember we were going to Madison Square Garden to see my brother Jim coach a game in the Garden. I don't know why we were driving in that day. We usually took the train, but we drove in that day. And he said, "And so, how'd you do?" I said, "Well, I had 11 points each." Whoa, double figures, that a boy. So I don't mean you don't celebrate achievement, but you put it in context. And he always put it in context, always. So there you go. Oh, that's very nice. Thank you. That's very nice, sir. Thank you for telling the story about you and your father in the car ride after the game. I'll use this to teach my son about life and sports. You believe me, you could do a lot worse. My dad knew what he was doing. Very, very, very insightful man. And as I said, that's the biggest endorsement. He made it fun. I'd see him going, off to work, and the enthusiasm he had. He was reffing and coaching at the same time. You know how crazy that is? I mean, he was reffing high school varsity games, obviously in leagues other than the one he was in, and then he was coaching his own team, and, I mean, it was unbelievable. He would have, like, a 4 o'clock game. They'd be done at, like, 6, and then he'd have to go somewhere across town for an 8 o'clock game to work as the referee because he just loved it. He loved being around it. Loved it. But he never – if I'd wanted to be a guitarist, he would have said, hey, be the best guitarist you could be. It was never, don't do this for me. Do it for you. I have played because I love it. But that was the best endorsement you could have done. It was like watching that guy, play with clay. It was, wow, this is fantastic. He had so much fun. So much fun. And that's the best endorsement you can give. You know, I once heard a child psychologist say the best thing a father can do for his kids is to love their mother. And I think the best thing a coach can do is to just love the game. And just unabashedly love the game. And if you do, kids are going to be naturally inquisitive. What the hell is this guy so excited about? So, this is the text of the year. Nick, we have to send this guy a present. I went to your camp at Bellarmine 3 or 4 years in a row. I had a blast. Now I snark text to your radio show about a walrus penis. As Bob Dylan sang, the times they are changing.
Right, I'll get that guy's number. That's hilarious. We'll get that man a t-shirt.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Thank you for...
Do you have any of the old T-shirts from the camp?
No, dear God, no.
We hold on to 25
years
crap.
Ago.
Yeah, but we hold on to so much crap.
Yeah, we don't have that. No, we don't. Somewhere in your vast array of stuff, I know you still have a Bellarmine red and white. We got you guys the red and white basketballs.
Those things were awesome.
Everybody who came to camp got a ball.
Those things were so awesome.
And it was a good ball. You could actually play with it, but some of the kids would just get it signed by their teammates or the coaches or whatever.
Not me. Well, I had one that was signed, and I wore off all
too, because you were the camp's director's son.
So I had more than
you had
that.
One that you could play with.
Dad,
and
I
one
had more than that.
All right, well, let's leave it at that. So it was a lot of fun. Let's tell everybody the story about the camp store. Want to? That's pretty cool.
All right, that's fine. Yeah. It's on brand. Also, I do want to give a shout-out to our friends at Topped. Topped Pizza.
Yes.
Speaking, because this kind of goes into the can.
I'm going to try and take credit for it, Nick, because we mentioned, and it's true, they have as close to a New York pizza as you're going to get in town right now. Honest to God. That's pretty darn good.
Butchertown Pizza closed. I mean, you still have some other great New York style.
But we had mentioned that on the air, and whether it was us or somebody else, but until somebody tells me it's somebody else, I'm going to say we did it. But we actually did say that regardless. They said, thank you for mentioning us on the air, and they brought over 3 humongous pizzas today.
Yeah.
And they are
They got a great special down here. Fantastic. At Cardinal
Town. What's the special?
It's two New York style slices,
right?
And a soda for $6.
The only problem is you have to actually go to New York to get the slices.
No, that's not true. They have them there.
So when I saw it, I thought it's going to cost a lot to go to New York. I mean, it's a good deal on the pizza, but good Lord.
They have that big New York style pizza oven. By the way, I feel really bad because she came over and she was super nice, and I was staring daggers at this woman. Because, hey, look, the Vitality program is fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to say it's bad. It isn't. It's a great program.
It is.
But you do have to, not eat certain junk foods.
You can't have pizza right now.
Yeah, you can't have pizza right now. And so I don't know why this happens every blanket time.
I know.
Time.
So that's why it's in this business. It's
I started it weight. Last time. And what happened? I went into a Thornton's gas station. And the guy behind the counter literally said to me, hey, man, I don't know what happened with the donut delivery guy, but he brought way too many.
Yep.
We're about to close. I'm about to throw these out.
Take as many as you want.
I had to box a thing of donuts that I couldn't eat. And he said, no, please, take more than that. And so I boxed the second one. He said, no, please. He said, honestly, you could take all of them. I boxed 4 dozen donuts and just put them in my car and brought them to my coworkers. And he was like, you sure? You sure you only want 4 dozen free donuts? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty positive I'm good, bud. I can't have any of these. And he was like, wait, why? And I was just like, started a diet today. I don't know why
that is, but you're absolutely true. I'll go to a drive-thru, and I'll say, okay, I'm being good. I'm going to get the salad. I'm not kidding you. And I'll get to the window, and she'll say, oh, man. Guy ahead of us was just ordering for his office, and we made duplicates of like everything. So I've got like 8 extra orders of fries here. You want some? Here, I put three large order of fries in your bag. Thanks, no charge. Thank you. What are you going to give them back to her?
I was going to say it's so nice. Like what the topped people did was so nice.
Exactly,
and that's awesome. But like she just had the 3 pizzas there. It's like no way, no blanking
it's
way,
unbelievable.
And I see everyone just walking around, smiling, happy as a clam.
I wonder if that'll work in other ways. Like if I swore off driving, could somebody come up? The house say, would you like my car? I don't really want this car anymore. We don't need it.
No, because you can't play. You can't play it.
Can't manipulate.
No, you can't.
Like
you can't manipulate.
It's got to be organic.
Yeah, exactly. You know my theory of the demigod of minor inconvenience and everything like that. You can't play that one. I don't think, or you shouldn't, because you're messing with forces you don't quite understand, because nobody really understands them. But I do think there's the demigod of challenge, and that's. He comes in during the diet or whatever, just like, do you really want to eat healthy?
He
dangles it in front of you, tests
makes
you.
It more satisfying when you do.
Yeah. Speaking of, I got process getting me some zucchini noodles
that
and chicken.
Attaboy.
So, yeah. Thanks,
you know what
brothers.
I just got
appreciate
for the
you.
House? It's perfect for the
oh, is it
a vegetable spiral?
Yeah, that's going
to
be great.
So that's been looking forward to that. Some texts coming in. Love the shoe story. Those must have bled green onto the socks. I'd never crossed my mind. I wish my dad were here to ask him. I don't know. Maybe they had some socks that they just said, guys, these are going to be your game socks because in about 2 days they're going to be green. So I don't know. Never thought about that. This one said, my son is a golfer. At an early age, I stressed to him 3 things when he played. Have fun. Learn something. Very good and very good. And if I ever see him throw a club, I'll take him off the course mid-round. Oh, man. I will say that. My dad, I will always be grateful to him for this. I didn't start playing. I was 10, and he would not let me even go on the course until I went to the driving range I don't know how many times. And you could see at least I could, make contact with the ball and advance it down the fairway. The first time I played, I'll never forget this, first time I played 18 holes, I shot 106. I was probably closer to 11 by that point. But, I mean, that's not bad. And I'm sure there were probably some. I played the forward, the kids' tees. But still, my point behind that is there's a lot of grown-ups out there who, would shoot about that. And what he told me at the very early age, and I never forgot it, was that we played without, I played a 9-hole course first, a little kind of an executive 9-hole course, and then we played a real 9-hole course, and then I played the 18-hole course. It was like he was like bringing me along, like a coach, which is what he was. But the one thing he told me was, nobody will mind playing with you if you understand the rules and the etiquette of the game. Just understand that. And to this day, I'm amazed how many good players ignore that. Like he used to say to me all the time, if you were the first one to hole out, his phrase was a subtle way of telling you get the flag. He would say, you win the flag. And then I was supposed to go get the flag and wait till everybody else putted out. And then as soon as the last one in the hole, put the flag in. And the reason for that is in New York, most of the golf courses at that time, the players are stacked up on each other like you know, discarded books in a library. They're right on top of each other. So if you are behind one of those groups where the guy holes out and they all start walking off and somebody has to remember to go put the flag back, or even if he doesn't forget it, the extra time it takes to go get the flag. He would always make sure he understood that whose turn it was. You waited for the player who was away. You never stepped on anybody else's line. We always walked in New York. Nobody rode when I was a kid. Beth Page, I don't know if you know this, but up until about 20 years ago, there were no carts. None. You had to walk every course. And so most of us use those trolleys, the little pull carts. And he would always make me aware of on every hole where to leave the pull cart. He's nothing worse than you finish a hole, and then the next tee is to your left, and the guy left his cart all the way to the right. Now he's got to walk all the way across the green to the right, get his cart, then come all the way back in front of the green. And meanwhile, the guys in the fairway are standing there waiting. Don't add your score standing by the green. Don't do that thing where you're standing on the green, only see one in the tree, two over here. Get the hell out of the way. Let the other people play. Step aside. And I thought, you know what? And he said, if you do that, doesn't matter. You can shoot 100, you can shoot 110, you can shoot 120, you can shoot 80. Doesn't matter. The people will enjoy playing with you. And I was like, wow, you know what? You're absolutely right. Understand. And that's part of the bigger picture of always respect the game. And you're right. Had I, you know, thrown a club, it would have been the end of my round. It would have been a let's go back to the clubhouse. He's probably a little disappointed in me as an adult because I've been a little cranky as an adult sometimes. But
sometimes. But, although it happens. There was the one time I had my entire golf bag almost in a tree. Because
you did?
I threw my 7-iron up there. That got stuck. So I had to throw my shoe up there. That got stuck. So then I threw my other shoe, which knocked down the 7-iron, but I still had a shoe up there. So then I threw a putter. That got stuck. And then, yeah, Jamie was just laughing his ass off the whole time.
That'll teach you. All right. So thanks for being with us, everybody. Talk Sports, Terry. Talk Sports, Tommy checking in. I don't know. That was tangentially sports there, Terry, Tommy. That's as close as we come a lot of the time, so you'll have to make do. Stick around, but before you go anywhere for a break, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you, I'm going to sneeze. That was me sneezing off air. Hopefully you didn't hear it.
It's got zucchini sauce all over my shirt.
I didn't do that. You did that.
Damn it.
People are going to think I sneezed on you. No, no. We're separated by glass.
Oh, that was actually kind of funny because it was green. Oh, that's the line. That's the line. We have an ongoing investigation about who defecated in the toilet.
Was I in favor of that? No. You know, Locke was trying gracefully to get you out of the shark discussion, but nope. You were like a tackler that would not let go. You had him by the ankles.
He sent me the sound.
But then he was done with it. And no, you wanted to do like surveys, callers. Have you ever shark? Well, yeah, the last time, like he kept a chart in his home, a shark chart. I mean, he was like, you know, when's the last time? No, it was done. The topic is finished. Let it go. If it's got to do with excretion or snot or some oozing bodily thing, or reproductive organs of animals that are larger than most people can appreciate, you are on that like, I was going to say Rona Barrett on Gossip, but 90% of you won't know who the hell that is. So
flies on poop. See?
There we are. Right back in your element. So,
when was the last time you sharted, Dad?
Hey, if you got a big credit card balance, you'll certainly want to get yourself in a situation where you can save some money. And one of those ways, the best way, is to think of our friends at Lightstream. You know, the average interest rate on credit cards right now is over 20%.
Stop. Don't do this, Reed. I'm dead serious. We're gonna pull the curtain back a little bit here because this particular advertising agency, I have to send them a minute before this read and a minute after. And I don't want the walk-up to be giant animal genitalia and poop.
How do you know they wouldn't love it? They might, we're re-upping with that station. You know how many stations we've been on? We can't get on with a host who's talking genitalia and excretion. Get me that big-headed kid. We're going to make him a star.
So maybe do that read a little later.
Well, then I'm not going to do any reads. I'm just going to go to break and try and drink my tea so my throat feels a little better.
All right, there we go. More V-Show on the other side. Neil Greenberg previews the Super Bowl from the Washington Post coming up at 1:30.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.